Dear listeners, Saram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, and the month of August is on. The weather is pleasant in Prashantinilam. There is no overwhelming crowd now, but soon a big group of alumni of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning will be here. There is a Sri Satya Sai alumni workshop being held in the Prashantinilam campus on August 10th, 13th, 2016. Hundreds of alumni have signed up for this event. This is a forum where the alumni would explore ways how they can enrich the university in various ways, augment the curriculum, facilitate collaboration with esteemed institutions and subject experts, upgrade the facilities and so on, and also, of course, interact with the current students in a more intense manner. In fact, it is always such a beautiful sight to see these seniors interacting with the current brothers, because you can see in them that genuine concern to be of help to their younger brothers. In fact, a group of alumni have also been conducting what is called Catalyst, which is a platform where the current students who graduate from the university are facilitated in getting appropriate job placements. This is again done by the seniors just so that their brothers have a helping hand as they transition from the college to the corporate world, completely a volunteer-driven initiative. Our university does not have any placement service, and it is in this manner so unlike any other college in the country where there are professional courses. But Swami was very clear that students here should learn with their focus not on the paycheck, but on their purity, not on the wealth, but on wisdom. This month, in fact, is very significant because it was in this month, 30 years ago, that Swami started the first professional course in his university, the Masters in Business Administration. Way back in 1986, the All India Board of Management Studies of the Government of India set up an expert committee to examine the proposal submitted by the university to organize the master's program in business management. The chairman of this committee was Professor Dharani Sinha, an eminent management expert and the then director of the Administrative Staff College of India. And so this committee visited Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in January 1986, and they spent time looking at the philosophy, the systems, the facilities, the infrastructure, the faculty, the location, the library, and they prepared a comprehensive report of their observations. And one of the opening lines of their report said, I quote, "Most impressive is the motivation and the determination of the faculty and the university authorities to offer MBA program relevant to national needs," unquote. They further added, quote, "The committee desires to underline the uniqueness of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. It is an Indian institute to its core. Its programs are welded in Indian culture and Indian values and ethos. The committee fervently believes that the MBA program in this institute shall also reflect this uniqueness in the management program as well. Besides, it has also the infrastructure for undertaking research on Indian management." And today you have so many research scholars in the university in the area of management. So going back to that committee's report, so the committee felt while management and technology are universal, their application has to be relevant to the culture, to the social and economic milieu in which they are being used. And so they observed that Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, which is cast in Indian culture, can meet this objective effectively. And they were very happy with the geographical location too, that it is not in a metro or a major city. They felt is a merit because it will help the students to understand the fabric of Indian society better. And if they understand this better, then they will know how to apply the management principles in the proper manner. So it was an extensive report where the committee hailed how in this institute pursuit of academic excellence, knowledge and wisdom is combined with duty and devotion, how all-round development is sought through games, meditation, yoga, service and so on. And their monumental recommendations concluded with saying, I quote, "It is our firm conviction that the Faculty of Business Management proposed to be established will, through its non-conventional programs and committed faculty members, be yet another worthy addition to various faculties which are endeavoring ceaselessly to promote innovative educational programs, experiences, values and ideals so dear to the institute. It is only when that management, only when management as a faculty is established, that the institute can do justice to offer these values to management students. In a more effective and intense manner." So the high-powered committee visited on January 1986. They submitted their report in April 1986 and the All India Board of Management Studies immediately approved their recommendation. In fact, the approval came in the next month itself. So on May 2nd, 1986, the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning had the permission to start a management program. It was possibly the shortest time such a thing had happened before. And then of course, so many things fell into place. Bhagwan, the most brilliant manager of all things at all times, set so many things into motion. Very soon the curricula, the faculty, the facilities, everything just happened as if magically. Even students came. And in just 2-3 months began the first batch of MBA students of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. The year was same, 1986. The month was this month. On August 21st, 1986, Bhagwan formally inaugurated the MBA course, and in that inaugural message, Swami said, I quote, "There are some things which are common to all business organizations in any country. These relate to matters such as accounts, production procedures, maintenance of statistics, material management and so on. But with regard to matters like business ethos and human relations, we in India have to choose our patterns in keeping with our culture, traditions and conditions." And then Bhagwan went on to emphatically say, "In the Sai Institute, we are attaching special importance to cultural and ethical values. Among these, the primary place is being given to Indian ethos and values. The MBA program will cover such matters as Indian economic environment, personal management, organizational behavior, business communication, and emphasis will be laid on personal management and human values, which do not figure very much in the course of studies in other management institutes now." And Bhagwan also said, "The use of computers will be an integral part of the course." And Bhagwan continued to explain in that discourse the relationship that should exist between management and workers. Swami said, management and workers should be, that relationship should be like the relationship between a mother and the children. It should be based on mutual love and understanding. And then Bhagwan went on to give a tip. He said, "It is desirable to start the day in every factory or workshop with a silent common prayer in which managers and workers join. When such prayers are held, the workers will be able to experience harmony in the factory." Wow, this is what Swami has very clearly laid down. It is a tip that he has given. And let me tell you, I have seen organizations which implement this. 2 years ago, I was in Grace Toyota office in Delhi, and I was so pleasantly surprised, so delighted. I saw that every member of the team in the morning Right from the managing director to the office worker, everyone stood in the same place, folded hands, and together they chanted the Gayatri Mantra. For 10-15 minutes there was this common prayer, and only after that everyone went to their work. You know, the atmosphere was so calm and so peaceful. Such a beautiful way to begin the day's operations. No wonder this company is doing great in spite of so many challenges in the auto sector, especially now in the state of Delhi. And the other aspect that Swami mentioned in that inaugural discourse is, Swami said, we do not want slogan writers and platform orators and yellow journalists. We want leaders who will be persons of integrity and character. The aim of management institutes should be to produce such leaders. Their courses should be based on Indian culture and values. In fact, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning perhaps is the only institute which has a full credit course on leadership in the Department of Management Studies. And over the years, so many leaders have emerged from this department. Some of them will be coming to Prashanthi Nilayam for their alumni workshop, which I mentioned, going to be held on August 13, 2016. I'm also waiting for it. I would like to capture some of those voices, some of their insights and experiences in the corporate world, so that we know how they are different and what difference they are making, and how they are an inspiration for so many of us, our current students and youth who are trying to follow the footsteps of Bhagwan. But today what I have for you is a conversation with an illustrious alumni of Bhagwan's management school, Brother Kota Shivkumar, who is an HR consultant and an entrepreneur. And joining him in this discussion is another experienced person from the corporate world, Mr. Ravi Naguri. He is the Chief Delivery Officer at Larsen & Toubro Technology Services, and he is someone who has spent a lot of time in analyzing and assimilating Swami's teachings and experimenting them in his workplace. So today we are going to listen to the first part of this discussion with MBA alumnus Kota Shivkumar and Mr. Ravi Naguri, and they share how to really implement work is worship, duty is God in the workplace. How easy or difficult it is to practice this in commercial work environments. I recorded this conversation in March 2016. So this is what we will listen to in this last leg of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. And for this special episode of Outside Inside, Deep Inside, Bhagwan has sent two beautiful individuals. One of them is a former student of Bhagwan's university, Brother Kota Shivkumar, and another has been a devotee of Bhagwan for more than 25 years, Brother Ravi Naguri. Brother Ravi Naguri today is Chief Delivery Officer, Transportation Computing and Product Software in L&T Technology Services. He is someone who has had 30 years of experience in the engineering space in the corporate sector. He initially started off in the central government working in the Department of Atomic Energy and then moved on to a US-based multinational company, and finally he is in the services now in India in engineering services for more than 12 years. So he is someone who has had a wide range of experience and expertise in engineering as well as in dealing with people at various levels. And Brother Kota Shivkumar again is someone who has had a lot of exposure and experience in dealing with people, because right from the time he passed out of the portals of Bhagwan's University in the year 1995 after his master's in business administration, he has been in the human resource management arena. In 2005, he actually became an entrepreneur and he started his own HR consultancy services, and it is called Insai Consultants. He's based in Hyderabad. So again, someone who has had decades of experience managing people, and he's someone also who has been speaking to a lot of youngsters, speaking to a lot of budding professionals, training corporates, training people in the Sai organization, working with also Radio Sai, because he's someone who's also been deeply involved in creating very inspirational programs, especially in the Telugu stream. So both of them have been very attached to Bhagwan and also very fascinated by his teachings. Not only fascinated, what is really very encouraging and what is very important for us in this program is how their fascination towards his teachings has led them to actually make them a part of their lives. It is one thing to love God, but the best way to love God is to love his teachings. And to love his teachings mean that you actually see his teachings play out in real life. How easy it is and how challenging it is when you want to do it in your personal space, in your social space, in your corporate space. There are many sayings of Bhagwan. For example, hands in the society, head in the forest. The proper study of mankind is man. We hear these sayings of Bhagwan, but when we actually try to put them into action, that is when you come to a point where you feel it is okay, but these are things that cannot be really lived in life, because their life has its own pulls and pressures. Everybody has so many things to do. At the end of the day, you are so tired looking after your family, balancing so many things in your life, that you even want to think hands in the society, head in the forest, or what does proper study of mankind, does man mean? You only just want to relax. You have sayings like work is worship, duty is God. We have heard these dictums of Bhagwan. But is it really possible to live them in real life? Bhagwan has sent these two beautiful souls to the studio, and I thought I should take this opportunity to get their insights on this particular adage, work is worship, duty is God, because this is something that we all deal with in our daily life. Every budding professional, every teenager who has passed out of the college and who is up to making his life, up to starting his career, is thinking about how can I really live this in my own jobs? How can I look at my boss and say, work is worship? How can I treat a job that has come to my hand which I don't like and say duty is God and do it? It is so difficult and it really doesn't put me at peace. So brothers, this is something that if you like, we could discuss today, brothers Kota Shikumar and Ravi Naguri. Can we dwell on work is worship, duty is God? What are your thoughts on this, brother Kota Shikumar?
Saram, brother Vishu. In the first place, just before I start my thought process, I want to say that you are a beautiful person. You are beautiful, so no wonder you see everybody as beautiful. So that's a very heartening thing. I was really, I should use the word within quotes, fascinated by one word you used, Brother Bishop, and use the word called fascinated. In the context that you said, we all are fascinated by what Swami tells us. So what came in my mind as an imagery is that how can the iron filings not be fascinated enough to get attracted to the magnet? Okay. So aren't we all like those iron filings who have no other option in life than getting attracted? You call it fascination, you call it attraction, doesn't matter. So I think someone who he has somehow chosen to attract I don't know what option we have about it. But such a beautiful word you used called fascination. I liked it. Yes, coming to this great adages that Swami has given, in the first place, I want to wish Sairam to all the viewers and then give my point of view like this, that we should all very quickly develop the conviction that these are not adages that just are good to repeat. For one simple reason, there are some wonderful souls in the world who are walking on the path of Swami, who are realizing these statements. And that's really inspiring.
They have not just been fascinated by his teachings, but living his teachings have become fashionable for them.
Exactly. That's very well put. You know, in fact, fashionable in the sense, not just in the sense of displaying anywhere, but in the sense of making it their code of conduct. And then that's a way of life. So, but we'll come to that. I think we need not really jump the gun in terms of trying to just end it there. I would like to probably at the very beginning, before I start inviting the views of my brother Ravi, I just want to share something that comes in my mind. It's a parable I heard of, and I don't know who contributed that actually, but I came across this about 20 years back. Amazing parable I came across, and it's called the pencil parable. The parable is very simple as it is, but I feel it is so holistic that it has so many connotations about whatever we do in life. The pencil parable talks about a pencil maker who makes a pencil. And then ever so lovingly, because it's his creation, he catches hold of the pencil and then says five things to the pencil. And then says, if you just remember these five things that I'm telling you, you are going to be the best pencil that you can ever be. This is the statement he makes. And then, so the pencil is very keen to listen to the five. And then the very first principle he says is that, you shall allow yourself to be held in someone's hand, because that is what is going to make you write well. And the second principle he says is that you will undergo a painful sharpening from time to time, but you should allow this so that the best comes out of you. And the third principle he talks about is you are bound to make some mistakes, but you should know that the wherewithal to correct the mistake is also given to you. I mean, the connotation is that pencils have erasers behind them. So that's the connotation we should try to have. And the fourth one he says is that the best part and most important part of you is what is inside, not what is outside. And the fifth principle is, it tells the pencil is that whatever might be the surface that you are given to write on, you should continue to write that too clearly and legibly. So these are the five principles. And I have delved on these principles and then tried to relate it to our lives, professional, careers, the work areas. And today, I would like to try and then see how this relates to this area that you started off, like the work area. For example, all of us, work is worship, or duty is God, when we have to try and understand these wonderful things that Swami is telling us. Can we try and then link up this wonderful pencil parable in a way so that it gives us a little more insight? Because your program actually is getting deeper inside always. So let us try to do that. So what I would do is that probably I'll just put out the first principle again and then try to invite Brother Ravi's thoughts on this. Like the first principle says,
you have to allow yourself to be held in someone's hand.
So Brother Ravi, you have some thoughts on that? Yeah. Out of your experience that is. Yes.
Sairam, Brother Kota and Sairam, Brother Bishu. It's a pleasure to be in Radio Sai. Sairam to all the viewers. It's my great privilege to be talking to all of you. It's a great parable, the pencil one, and we've been using it quite some time in our industry as well. So the first one which we talked about is, you know, to be allowed to be held by somebody else in your career, in your in the beginning of your career. It's a very, very important philosophy and what should I say, part of the whole career, if I can say. When a person starts his career, it's always in a team. There's never, as Swami says, there's never an individual who can be on his own. It's always in a team, in a society.
Yes.
That's how you should work. And when you are in a team, there are several different activities in a team. And sometimes, you know, you tend to look at them as mean to important. Like the five fingers in a hand, none of the activities are similar. Yes. But unless all the five fingers join, you cannot make a fist and you cannot make an impact.
Yes.
Same way, in a team, when you are joining and when you start your career, become part of the team. Classic examples I get is, when you start a project, you have developers, you have testers, you have documentation people, and there's always a feeling that the other side of the part is green, you know.
Right.
Testers think that, you know, development job is great and
we
should do it.
In a software environment.
In a software industry. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. So we always try to tell them that the role you play is so critical. It doesn't matter what the other person is doing.
Mm.
Unless you do your role properly, you cannot achieve what is needed for the project. Another classic example, if I can say, is I was involved in the aerospace industry for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can say, the saying goes is, the amount of documentation you need to generate for qualifying an aircraft is equivalent to the weight of the aircraft.
Oh, my God.
It is true. It is true. So that's the amount of activity you need to do. But why we need to do? The amount of safety, environment, and the amount of risk on not doing an activity or requirement or a verification appropriately is that huge.
Yes.
The impact of it is that huge.
Mm.
So a person who is sitting and writing the documentation of it is so critical. If you do one mistake, it can result in several severe amount of fatality.
Yes.
So that's where, if we can realize that even a documentation for that purpose is so critical, and people relate to that and become allowed, you know, they allow themselves to be part of the team, to allow themselves to be molded by a project team, I think that definitely helps them as well as the organization.
Very well said. Actually, just adding to what Brother Ravi said, Brother Bishu, I've seen in HR, when I interview many people, when people are trying to step into their careers jobs, see that people have their stereotypes about the roles. People make the stereotypes and about what kind of job that I would want to do. What is that I already got bored about? What is that you should stay away because some people in the market say this is not a great role to do. This is not a great job to do. And so on. So we are talking about work is worship. When you're doing worship, one day you might have a few flowers. One day you might have 108 flowers. One day you might have great garlands. One day you might not have. The quality of worship doesn't change. Because the worship is not based on exactly what you're doing in the worship, but it is based on the heart of the worshipper and then to whom they're giving the worship. This is basically the concept of worship according to me. If you draw a parallel, there is something higher with every work, every piece of work, which you can call as that which you should allow yourself to be held in.
Yes.
You call it a vision of a company, you call it the team spirit, you call it the greater. What at the end of it, you can just call it your own personal vision. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes if you are held in your personal vision, which is a great vision, you might not have any problem in doing currently what you have to do.
Mm.
See, the whole concept, this pencil parable, I think the principle looks at is that if unless somebody is guided by a greater purpose and vision, which is inspiring enough to make them go through the current thing in a very beautiful way, there is always something that is going to come up as an ego to like or dislike.
Exactly.
It is going to create an obstacle in the way it happens.
That's a very beautiful, Bhagwan used to always give this example of Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti and Parameshti.
Yes.
And I think there was no discourse of Bhagwan to students, especially to management students, where, you know, he did not talk about our connection with society. In fact, you know, he used to say, service is our birthright.
Right.
And at many times, you know, I used to also feel how foolish it is when someone says that, you know, I'm a self-made man. You know, many times when we achieve a particular goal in life, or you wanted to reach this designation, or you wanted to achieve this particular feat, and then, you know, you feel I'm a self-made man. For, to me, it seems like it is so fallacious. It is so empty because how many things in life do we really have control of? We didn't even know that we'll be talking now.
Right.
Anything could have happened and this discussion could not have happened.
Right.
You are in Hyderabad, he is in Bangalore, that we are meeting today and talking. A lot of things have to fall in place.
Right.
So for anyone to say that I'm self-made is to be oblivious, ignorantly, of the fact that so many things have fallen in place and so many people in so many ways have contributed, including your family members, including someone in your home who has provided food for you. So many things have happened.
Absolutely.
For you to become what you have become.
Absolutely.
So nobody is a self-made man. So I think to always know that I am just one in the chain and I have to work with so many people will always ensure that I'm always humble and that I'm always accommodative. And
absolutely.
Then I'm always a team man.
Absolutely. Nice to look at it. Such a valid point, Brother Bishu, you're saying, you know, instead of probably we telling ourselves that I'm a self-made man, probably another way of looking at it is that right now divinity is working through this self.
Yes.
This can be a beautiful way to look at things,
yes.
You know, because divinity chose somehow to work.
Yes.
It can work through any self in any way it
Absolutely.
Wants. Now, something came to my mind. There is an interesting sport in one of the water theme parks in the world. I don't know where probably. There is something in San Francisco, I think. And there it seems there is a water adventure sport
mm-hmm.
that's very, very unique. You get into a boat and then it gradually starts off moving. And then the water, now it becomes torrential in terms of the water flow. And then you start losing it. But you have certain controls and then it starts going almost like the slide, water slides you have. It starts
mm-hmm.
going like that into something you don't know because it's just a wide open thing. It looks like at some point there are some waterfalls.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks pretty dangerous, the whole
mm-hmm.
stuff. And then you're going into that, but you are given certain controls to just change the direction of it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have anything
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
You're
mm-hmm.
given controls to change the direction.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like at the right point now the adventure is all that. At the right point you're turning and then it takes you to the right thing and then you feel really that adrenaline rushing
mm-hmm.
and then people feel very happy. They say that usually it comes to a point where there is almost like a precipice and a waterfall that is there, and then you know that if you go there it is fall, so you try to divert it, but suddenly you find that the boat doesn't divert. It doesn't take
uh-huh.
your order. And then it's just rushing towards that. Now everyone almost has this kind of feeling. You think you're gone. But then it so happens that you go over that and it takes you to safety and you land.
Oh, okay.
Now, there are a lot of people who go enjoy it and go away, but it seems some people who are interested come second, third time, they try to check out what actually is happening is, they find that the controls were never with them. They were always remotely controlled.
Oh, okay.
All the boats are remotely controlled.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if they went the direction which they were trying to take to avoid this, they show that would have led them to a very dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it lands them.
Mm.
I think this is a great image about how divinity works with us.
Absolutely. In fact, as you mentioned this, you know, I feel I'm contradicting my point in the sense that, you know, every person can say that I'm self-made. I'm not contradicting, but I'm saying when you change the perspective, the statement is true and it acquires so much of significance if you replace that S, that small S with a capital S.
Absolutely. That's it.
If you replace that,
yes.
See, everybody is self-made,
yes.
but he's made by the self.
Yes.
The capital S.
Exactly.
So when we say allow yourself to be held in someone's hand, one aspect of it is, yes, to be a team man. But ultimately to know that everything in my life is happening because there is someone else in charge.
Right.
Yes. I think if we have that perspective, then you don't complain.
You
go with the flow.
That is true.
If I can add a few more points there. When we talk about being a team and allowing somebody to, in some forms, dictate what is to be done, it's so critical to understand. Some of the parables we use is, we talked about boat and
right.
I remember the Kerala boat race.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in that whole boat
yes.
is critical.
Absolutely.
And everybody has to row it exactly at the same time.
Yes.
If even one doesn't do, the boat doesn't go in the right speed
yes.
and right velocity.
Yes.
So that is the way we try to inform or, you know, motivate the team members to say that everyone is important, everybody has to do their job,
yes.
and that's only when the boat reaches the destination.
They say, you know, your chain is as strong as the weakest
yes.
link.
Yes,
yes absolutely.
I just want to add, I know that probably I'm stretching on this point, but I just want to add something, a little on the what Swami tells us inside. Use the word samasti, then vyasti. Mm-hmm. And then we also used about the team. This is a great, the snake boats and all that, Chundam Vellam in Kerala. It's a beautiful example. Now, in order that every person just does his bit, if you compare, for example, you look at a centipede and you look at the 100 feet that are moving, what intelligence is moving each of the feet? Probably, if the centipede has to consciously move the legs, it will be eternally confused. You see, you look at it.
Yeah.
There is some intelligence that is deciding which feet moves ahead and which moves move back, etc., and which is guiding the entire centipede.
Mm.
Now, this is possible when there is one intelligence guiding the centipede, which is without individual intelligence to the legs.
Correct.
Now, if this you think is the samasthi when it comes to a group of humans, if you put it like this, as long as the individual activity or individual intelligence is predominating in the individual and you're in a team and trying to take its own call for egoisms or whatever, somewhere it's getting affected. How do we quickly come to a calibration where we lose our individuality into the team intelligence?
Absolutely.
It's a great thought, you know.
Amazing.
That is the Samashti thought that we have to take into the teamwork in corporates.
Fantastic. Well, I'm always reminded of the first principle of management. You know, when you study MBA, there are Foyle's principles of management, if I'm not wrong. And the first principle is subordination of individual interest for group interest.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. But as we discussed, it starts with that. But where it has to lead to is to know that I am a team man, not only with all my colleagues, but I have also teamed up with God.
Yes.
That's I think when we have both these perspectives clear, then perhaps the pencil will write very well.
So in fact, I'm sorry I'm being spoiled sport every time I'm taking a little more time, but this is a point. All of us whose lives have been touched by Swami know this, that when we are with Swami or we go back, and then when we come back to Swami for darshan, if we are doing jobs or whatever, Swami so lovingly asks a few questions to students or children. He says, what work are you doing? Where are you working? How much salary do you earn? And are you doing enough? Now, this is just a physical reminder Swami is giving about the subtle reminder he always has put as conscience in you. And then he keeps saying that the hand that holds you for all those people whose lives have been touched by Swami need not be anything. It is just Swami. Give up yourself to Swami and say that I am answerable to Swami, accountable to Swami. He is the one who is holding me in my work. And you are the instrument. So, you see, the best of the screwdrivers, let us say that there are three screwdrivers. One screwdriver, when you try to put it into that screw, the front part actually breaks and falls down. You would put it aside. The second screwdriver, it is distinct. The part you are holding is turning, but actually the one which is holding the screw is not turning. You know, these things can happen. So you drop it. The third screwdriver, which is turning along with that and it is doing the job. Now you tell me, what is the difference between three screwdrivers? All of them are instruments. But hand chooses to go and pick up only that which is just doing its job. So, who's an instrument? Who's a good instrument to do the work as worship? That person who's just keeping himself fit. To be used as an instrument. Yes. Where you will be used, how will be used, you don't know. You don't have any option till you actually hand comes and uses you.
Wonderful. So, the first principle is allow yourself to be held in someone's hand. And that someone is a capital S.
Yes. Absolutely.
The second point, as you mentioned, is that you are going to be sharpened.
Yes.
Off and on. And I think this is no news to anyone.
No news to anyone.
That is true.
Before I hand it over to Brother Ravi, I just want to say, this I feel in many ways is the principle of no pain, no gain. So we are all used to that in this world that, you know, sitting in your sofa and eating butter popcorn has never made anybody get their six abs or, you know, your muscles. But that person, when it was much more easier to sleep under the blanket, went out into the gym and then worked for 1 hour every morning, definitely at the end of 6 months, you're able to see some muscles, something coming out. The question to ask is this. These things that came out 6 months down the line, where were they hiding all these 6 months? This is the most important question to be answered. Now, which market did you go exactly to buy it and put it on yourself? How did they come? So, everyone has to give this answer that they were there inside, it came out. Now, the second question, if they were always there inside, how did they come out? Because there was a process to bring it out. And if you knew that the process was there to bring it out, then why don't many people take up the process? Because it is too difficult and too painful to do the process. So what we need to remember is that gain is there given to everybody in God's creation. Those who are ready to take the pain are getting the gain. That's as simple as that. So with this few thoughts, I'll give pass it on to Brother Ravi.
Wonderful, wonderful, Brother Kota. So one other example which comes to my mind, Swami has used this very frequently, is like the pencil which needs to be sharpened to become better. He talks about gold also.
Yes.
Unless you completely melt it, use hammer to make a beautiful jewelry. Unless you go through those hardships, it's not possible. Same way in the industry also, we should and we must realize that it is necessary to go through those hardships as well as, you know, skilling, reskilling, because the technology and the industry is ever changing. Whatever is the technology which is relevant today may not be relevant tomorrow. And whatever industry you are working today may not be relevant tomorrow. So that ability or willingness to allow yourself to be remold or bold is critical for the any youth to succeed in their life.
What are the generally the pain points for any typical youngster who has just stepped into a corporate career?
So first important thing would be to move from an academia to an industry. Academia, we always say campus is always fun to work with, and when you go to an industry, you suddenly find a completely different atmosphere. Even though organizations are making every effort to make industry look like a campus, but there is always a complete different methodology for them. What they need to do is make sure that they understand, they are open, they're willing, they're flexible to allow those changes to happen. So the way we look at it is, you know, unless you are ready to learn new things and do those new things, it will be difficult for them to grow in their career. So they cannot be rigid. No, I don't want to be sharpened. Then it becomes a very difficult thing. Organizations may leave them, but their careers won't go anywhere unless you are an exception to the rule.
This is one point I want to bring in here. I think there's a very big cultural aspect about this where we're all the way we are educated, the 10 plus 2 plus 4, 5, whatever, the way we are educated, it gives us this kind of thing that work hard right now, give yourself up, sacrifice something, then you are going to have a great life. Okay, this is a model that we build in the society. Now, what is an average student who's finishing his job or her job and then thinking? They're thinking that the moment I'm on my own, the moment I'm making some money, it's all fun. No doubt it's fun. But fun in what sense? Their concept of fun is that all the work that I have been doing till now, I did not work so hard. You see, the model, the way it happens is that there is something that is liberating is what you think. But somewhere, this is where I think Swami defined it as, you can say work is fun and all that, the modern paradigms, they're okay. But the whole point is that he's saying work is worship. Now, if you're not able to enjoy your worship, that's your problem.
Exactly.
But worship means that you need not be serious in terms of having a castrol face, but seriousness is not the right word in English, but I think the right word is earnestness. Everything in life, if you want to really enjoy, requires earnestness. You want to eat some good food, you need to be earnest to enjoy the taste. You want to enjoy a good hot water bath, you need to be earnest enough to feel it on your body, but not keep thinking of something else when you're enjoying it. Basically, life is all about being earnest in every moment that we have to go through. This earnestness, when it is there, you will see that work just provides a different kind of space to you than what you had experienced till now. So what I was saying is that how do we, the whole point is how do we bring this paradigm shift in the attitude of people when they're joining up jobs to see that it is not freedom. Freedom doesn't mean that you're suddenly, you know, you don't feel the restrictions or you don't have to sit for 8 hours. It's nothing like that. In fact, probably it might increase. Suddenly you're finding you're sitting for 10 hours. But there is something more. Responsibility is a great freedom, actually speaking. It's not a restriction, it's a freedom is what I feel. But I won't expand on that. I'll come back to that. I think Brother Avay
said, if I can add, probably I can give a personal example in this. So when I finished my engineering and did from Osmania, in those days Andhra State, from where I come from, that was the number one college. You did manage to get into electronics, which was supposed to be the number one. As you said, you know, finished 4 years, great, got into a job. The first thing they said is, okay, you're going to go through one more training. I said, okay, what does that mean? So 1 year of rigorous training on nuclear engineering. That's where I joined Atomic Energy. So whatever I learned in 4 years was put aside in some form. And then again, we are going through a remold of becoming a nuclear engineer. So we go through 1 year of that, and after that you get placed into a department. When I joined the department, after a few days, there was a kind of a restlessness. I looked at what I did in these 4 years and what I did in this 1 year, how much of it I'm going to use. And I go back to my freshers who come to my industry, in my organization, whenever they come, I ask them, how much percentage of what you studied you would be using in your work time? People, very optimistic guys talk about 50% and very pessimistic guys talk about 0%. But it is very close to maybe 10 or even less than that. So the reason I'm saying that is the remolding you should allow it to be done.
Yes.
And what you are gaining in the earlier process, don't ever think that that is lost.
Yeah.
It is with you. I keep telling them, visiting people, that after 12th, whatever be your analytical ability or problem solving skills, has gone up several notches after you finished your engineering.
Yeah.
And that remains with you.
The training.
Yeah.
The training is what remains you. You have learned to learn.
Yes, absolutely. And you have learned to solve problems.
Yes.
So, you would think that these are those moldings and, sharpenings which happen. And that is a necessity.
Yeah.
As you go on through your career.
Absolutely.
That's what I look at.
I want to come back to what the point, Brother Kota, you were saying. See, you have to do this. You know, we discussed about, you know, we being adaptive and we being flexible. But what I would like to say is, you actually do not have a choice. You are in a job. Okay. You better learn. You better perform. Otherwise, nobody is going to keep you there for long. But how do we ensure that it doesn't become a painful process?
Right. Yeah. I think it's very simple. I'll try to approach this from a HR point of view. In fact, this program is called Outside Inside Deep Inside. When you take the same process outside, when you look at work outside, as somebody is doing it, it looks like the equation is in between compensation and contribution.
Hmm.
Now, this is the HR language you use, parlance. Hmm. Individual is contributing when they are doing, and the outside is compensating for that in terms of money. And most of the people in the world want to look at it like this. That, you know, I'm getting a compensation, so I need to. In fact, somebody asked me once, if someone knew that at the end of the month they are not getting a pay, would they ever swipe in at the right time? So this was a question someone really was asking me. You know, what motivates a person to start from home and go to the office?
Yes.
Because, you know, it looks like a theory X of motivation seems to be working sometimes. Mm. The theory X of motivation says that inherently human being is lazy.
Mm.
Not a very good thing to hear. Not a very great feeling there. I don't subscribe to that theory though. You know, I don't. There is an element of truth in that.
Yes.
At a superficial level, but it's not completely true.
Mm.
However, what I'm trying to say is that that's an external paradigm, that you have that compensation contribution. But a true equation which motivates a person, what should guide us with Swami's grace, is that potential turns to performance. See, those are the two C's. The deep inside to inside, or, you know, bringing it up for you, is actually more about converting your intention. Potential, you'll have to first believe that you are in a job after a selection process because somebody has found you good enough to be in the job. You definitely have something to contribute there in that role, but however, it is not automatic. The potential inside has to be like, you know, that I talked about the muscles inside, which requires a process of bringing it out. So the entire principle we are talking about as sharpening is a principle of converting potential to performance. Because ultimately what matters in this world, in a business context or any organization, is only performance, if you look at it. Because the customer is paying you or giving you business because there's a performance. There needs to be a performance. So nobody can just talk the language of potential and get away in this world.
Yes.
Okay. In fact, Swami Vivekananda very famously said that entire humanity seems to be a sad story of great potential never converted into performance. Or rarely converted into performance. I mean, he spoke from a very high level of spirituality.
Yes.
He said, the responsibility for every individual in this life is to, before the life ebbs out of our body, to check out why we have come here.
Yes.
He says, and this is the conversion of the potential to performance. But he says, the unfortunate truth is that very few happen to do it. But keeping that aside anyway, the minimum thing when we go to a workplace is that each of us has certain strength. Each of us has certain capability. You have been trained in that. You'll have to go through more training in that so that it becomes now adequate enough to be contributing as a performance. So I think that when the equation is between compensation and contribution, there's always confusion. And that is what is happening in the world today in terms of all the comparisons. Jealousy and it takes hold of you.
Yes.
But when you look at potential to performance, there is no way you can get confused because every individual unmistakably knows whether the potential is converted or not into performance. They would know. Each of us would know whether our potential is completely coming out or not, if we just turn a little inside.
The motivation to convert your potential into performance is the key.
Right.
If our motivation is anything external, if it is money or, you know, if it is anything external, that is where things perhaps get a little dicey. But if our motivation is something internal, something higher, as we talked about, because, you know, someone said that our work, if every day our work is something that we do not enjoy, then it becomes stress. But if it is a work that we enjoy, then it becomes passion. If it is a work that we are grateful to God for and we do it as service to Him, then we are blessed. So we can convert a stress into a blessing. A right. Stressed life becomes a blessed life.
Right. Yes. But sometimes even without complicating things, when you look at it, Brother Vishu, motivation, the word comes from actually the Latin word imovere. The motive, automotive, locomotive, something that moves by itself is called automotive. Motivation is not the same as inspiration. This is what
inspiration.
I always tell.
Yeah,
inspiration is at the thought level.
Yes.
Feeling level. Yes. Motivation is an action. That's what it, you have to move from point one to point two. This is what is the automotive and locomotive in this world. So, clear demonstration of moving from point to point just gets into action. And you will see that actually action is much more easier in this world than analysis paralysis syndrome. A lot of us are caught up in whether to do or not, rather than getting into the zone. When you get into the zone, some improvement has to happen. There's a simple point of life is that if you're presented with a situation, just get into the act and try to do something. Just get into the act and then move your hands, move your fingers. I'll tell you, one of the famous examples is the physical exercise that people have to do. Physical exercise, everyone on every January 1st, December 31st, we are resolving that I'll be doing this and I'll be doing that. The story is very familiar and most of us end up not doing. But if you look at it, people can do, but why we don't do is that we are thinking that if I have to do, I have to do half an hour exercise. Who stops you from doing for 1 minute throwing your hands here and there? Somewhere in our psychology, we have set it up that if I have to be successful, I should be as successful as Bill Gates. Or something else, as my definition goes. But you can definitely be successful than what you are right now just by doing a little bit more. This is the truth about life. And you'll be surprised that the mind is so conditioned that when you do a little more, your mind itself prompts you to, propels you to do a little more, and a little more, and a little more, and that's so much fun. So motivation starts from, like the Chinese proverb, a journey of 1,000 miles starts from the first step. Motivation is not anything so big as it is made to look like. Motivation is based on the honest motives, you know. What is motive? If I have a motive to eat, if I have a motive to live, if I have a motive to be loved and then to love, then why don't I have a motive to do something about the energy I have? It is there. I have to be honest to myself. I can't cheat myself. And then say that, oh, I lack in motivation. Very few are actually medically depressed in cases. Let me just tell you.
Even I believe so.
Let us leave alone those people for whatever reason. Rest of them are not medically depressed. They are more conveniently depressed.
Yes.
You know, I'm using my depression more for my convenience to get away from things.
Yeah. Very true. I mean, I too believe that.
Yeah.
So we have to be willing to be sharpened. We have to be willing to be chiseled.
Right. Yeah.
Because only then a stone can become a beautiful statue.
That is true. That is true.
And if you go through that process in a positive frame of mind, that is when the process becomes rewarding.
Absolutely.
And it is not damaging. Otherwise, it can be very damaging also.
Yeah.
Maybe another important thing is the end result. You talked about a beautiful example, chiseling.
Yes.
You know, unless you are able to see the end result of a beautiful statue or a lord coming out of that stone, you would not be motivated to go through the chiseling.
Yes.
Or you should not be motivated to do it yourself. So I think that is a critical thing to make sure that individuals realize that this is the journey, this is the way to become much better human being, youth, career, in every sense.
I would think that, you know, if this is true for someone to achieve a material position, a material gain, you know, you want to reach a certain position in your corporate life, it is equally true and to a much greater extent when it comes to spiritual attainments too.
Absolutely.
You know, when you want to get over a particular weakness in you, it's the same process.
Absolutely.
You have to allow yourself to be chiseled. It is never going to be easy, but you're going to shine.
Yeah.
You're going to shine.
In fact, brothers, when you were sharing, I was reminded of a real-time incident that happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story most people know. I don't know the second name of the person, but the first name is Abraham. He was a great sculptor in France. And he was the one who led that entire team of people who created the Statue of Liberty, which is gifted to the United States. And this happened in about 1884, around that time it was given. And it was carved out and then taken there. And you'd find that the first flight aeroplane was not still there. was never invented. The Statue of Liberty stood at such a height that, unless you were in a flight, and this happened much, much, much later with the flights, you couldn't have seen the aerial view of that lady, mm-hmm. of Liberty. But then they found that, when they went up, they found that every strand of hair of that lady was so beautifully done, exquisitely mm-hmm. done that, mm-hmm. what would have taken the person who knew that I'm going to put it there and nobody is ever going to see this,
yes.
had the commitment just because there was a passion to convert potential yes. to performance.
Yes.
This is the inspiration that
I think that is what is karma yoga.
Yes, exactly.
If you think that I am doing it not for money, I'm not doing it for my boss in the company, but I'm doing it for myself. I'm doing it for the self in me.
Right.
Because this is my worship to him.
Yes.
Then you'll always do what... Everything to perfection.
Right. Absolutely.
Fantastic. So dear listeners, that was the first part of the conversation with Brother Kota Shiv Kumar and Mr. Ravi Naguri. Brother Kota Shiv Kumar is an HR consultant, entrepreneur, and Mr. Ravi Naguri is the Chief Delivery Officer at Larsen & Toubro Technology Services. And I hope you enjoyed the reflections and their insights and their anecdotes and their stories on how to convert work into worship through the parable of the pencil. There are many more lessons to learn from the pencil parable, and we will dwell with them. We will deal with them in the coming episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. I'm Team Radiosai's Bishu. Any feedback, any suggestions, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. With a heart full of gratitude, we offer every program on this beautiful Thursday at His Lotus Feet. And thank you all too, dear listeners, for your encouraging feedback, your words, and your graciousness in giving us this opportunity to be of use to you in sharing His love and His message. Thank you so much. Salam.